Chapter 23, Next Door to a Weaver. Nynaeve did want to talk to Elaine, away from the innkeeper's ears, but she did not find the chance right away. The woman marched them out of the room, doing a fine imitation of a guard on prisoners, her stony impatience undented by the wary look she cast at Matt's door. At the back of the inn, a set of unrailed stone steps led down into a large, hot kitchen full of baking smells, where the roundest woman Nynaeve had ever seen was wielding a large wooden spoon like a scepter, directing three others in sliding crusty brown loaves from the ovens and replacing them with rolls of pale dough. A large pot of the coarse white porridge that was eaten for breakfast hereabout bubbled gently on one of the white-tiled stoves.
"Enid," Mistress Anan addressed the round woman, "I'm going out for a little while. I need to take these two children to someone who has time to mother them properly."
Wiping broad, floury hands on a piece of white toweling, Enid studied Nynaeve and Elaine disapprovingly. Everything about her was round, her sweaty, olive-skinned face, her dark eyes, all of her. She seemed made of very large balls stuffed into a dress. The marriage knife she wore hanging outside her snowy apron sparkled with a full dozen stones.
"Is this the pair of barkers Kyra was chattering about, mistress? Fancy bits for the young lord's taste, I'd have said. He likes them with a bit of wiggle."
That amused her by her tone. The innkeeper shook her head in vexation. "I told that girl to hold her tongue. I won't let that sort of rumor touch the wandering woman. Remind Kyra for me, Enid, and use your spoon to get her attention if need be." The gaze she turned on Nynaeve and Elaine was so disparaging that Nynaeve nearly gasped.
"Would anyone with half their wits believe these two were Aes Sedai? Spent all their coin on dresses to impress the man, and now they'd starve unless they smile for him. Aes Sedai."
Giving Enid no chance to answer, she seized Nynaeve's ear with her right hand, Elaine's with her left, and in three quick steps had them out into the stable yard. That was as long as Nynaeve's shock held. Then she pulled free, or tried to, because the woman let go at the same instant, and she stumbled half a dozen paces, glaring indignantly. She had not bargained for being dragged about. Elaine's chin rose, her blue eyes so cold Nynaeve would not have been surprised to see frost forming in her curls. Hands on her hips, Mistress Anan seemed not to notice. Or perhaps she simply did not care.
"I can hope no one in there believes Kyra after that," she said calmly. "If I could have been sure you had the wits to keep your mouths shut, I'd have said and done more and made certain."
She was calm, but not at all pleasant or soft. They had troubled her morning.
"Now follow me and don't get lost. Or if you do, do not show your faces anywhere near my inn again, or I'll send somebody to the palace to tell Marilla and Teslin. They are two of the real sisters, and they'll probably rip you each down the middle and share you out."
Elaine shifted her gaze from the innkeeper to Nynaeve. Not a glare or a frown, yet a very meaning look just the same. Nynaeve wondered whether she was going to be able to go through with this. The thought of Matt convinced her. Any chance was better than that. "We won't lose ourselves, Mr. Zanon," she said, striving for meekness. She thought she did fairly well, considering how foreign meekness was to her. "Thank you for helping us." Smiling at the innkeeper, she did her best to ignore Elaine, whose stare became more meaningful, hard as that was to credit. Looks or no looks, she had to make sure the woman continued to think them worth the trouble. "We are truly grateful, Mistress Anan." Mistress Anan eyed her askance, then sniffed and shook her head. When this was done, Nynaeve decided, she was going to drag the innkeeper to the palace if need be, and make the other sisters acknowledge her in Mistress Anan's presence. This early, the stable yard was empty save for a lone boy of 10 or 12 with a bucket and a sieve, who sprinkled water to dampen the hard-packed ground against dust. The white-plastered stable's doors were wide open, and a barrow sat in front with a dung fork resting across it.
Sounds like a huge frog being stepped on floated out. Nynaeve decided it was a man singing. Would they have to ride to reach their destination? Even a short journey would not be pleasant. Walking only across the square and meaning to be back before the sun rose very high, they had brought neither hats nor parasols nor hooded cloaks. Mr. Sanan led them through the stable yard, however, down a narrow alleyway between the stable and a high wall that had drought-bedraggled trees poking above the top. Someone's garden, no doubt. A small gate at the end led into a dusty alley, so cramped Dawn had not completely reached it yet. "You children keep up now, mind you," the innkeeper told them, starting away down the dim alley. "You lose yourselves, and I vow I'll go to the palace myself." Nynaeve took a grip on her braid with both hands as she followed, to keep them from the Anan woman's throat. How she yearned for her first grey hairs! First the other Aes Sedai, then the sea folk. Light, she did not want to think about them. And now an innkeeper! No one took you seriously unless you had at least a little grey. Even an Aes Sedai's ageless face could not possibly do as well in her estimation. Elaine was lifting her skirts out the dust, though their slippers still kicked up little puffs that settled on the hems of their dresses. "Let me see," Elaine said softly, looking straight ahead. Softly, but coolly. Very coolly, in fact. She had a way of slashing someone to tatters without letting her tone heat that Nynaeve admired, usually. Now it just made her want to box the other woman's ears. "We could be back in the palace, drinking blueberry tea and enjoying the breezes, while we waited for Master Cawthon to move his belongings. Perhaps Avienda and Birgitta might return with something useful. We could finally be settling exactly what to do with the man. Do we simply follow him along the streets of the Rahad and see what happens, or take him into buildings that look likely, or let him choose? There must be 100 worthwhile uses for this morning, including deciding whether it's safe to go back to Egwene, ever, after that bargain the sea folk wrung out of us. We have to talk about that sooner or later. Ignoring it won't help. Instead, we are off on a walk of who knows what length, squinting into the sun the whole way, if we keep on as we are, to visit women who feed runaways from the tower. Myself, I don't have much interest in catching runaways this morning or any morning, but I'm sure you can explain it so I will understand. I do so want to understand, Nynaeve. I would hate to think I'm going to kick you the length of the Mulhara for nothing." Nynaeve's eyebrows drew down. Kick her? Elaine really was becoming violent, spending so much time with Avienda. Someone ought to slap some sense into that pair. "The sun isn't high enough to make us squint yet," she muttered. "It would be soon, unfortunately. Think, Elaine. 50 women who can channel, helping wilders and women put out of the tower." She felt guilty sometimes using the term wilders. In the mouths of most Aes Sedai it was an insult, but she intended to make them speak it as a badge of pride one day. And she called them the Circle. That doesn't sound like a few friends to me. It sounds organized. The alley meandered between high walls and the backs of buildings, many showing bare brick through the plaster, between palace gardens and shops where an open back door revealed silversmiths or tailors or woodcarvers at work. Every so often Mistress Anan looked over her shoulder to make sure they still followed. Nynaeve gave her smiles and nods she hoped would convey eagerness. "Nynaeve, if 2 women who could channel made a society, the tower would fall on them like a pack of wolves. How would Mistress Anan know whether they can or not anyway? Women who can and aren't Aes Sedai do not go about making a show of themselves, you know. Not for very long, anyway. In any case, I can't see it makes a difference. Egwene might want to bring every woman who can channel into the tower somehow, but that is not what we are about here." The frosty patience in Elaine's voice tightened Nynaeve's hands on her braid. How could the woman be so dense? She bared her teeth again for Mistress Anan, and managed not to scowl at the innkeeper's back when her head turned forward once more. 50 women isn't 2, Nynaeve whispered fiercely. They could channel. They must be able to. Everything hinged on that. It's beyond reason that this circle can be in the same city with a storeroom packed full of Angreal and such, without at least knowing of it. And if they do... She could not keep satisfaction from honeying her voice. We'll have found the bull without Master Matrim Cawthon. We can forget those absurd promises.
They were not a bribe, Nynaeve, Elaine said absently.
I will keep them, and so will you, if you have any honor, and I know you do. She was spending entirely too much time with Avienda.
Nynaeve wished she knew why Elaine had begun thinking they all had to follow this preposterous Aiel G, whatever it was.
Elaine bit her underlip, frowning. All that iciness seemed to have vanished. She was herself again, apparently.
Finally, she said, We would never have gone to the inn without Master Cawthon, so we'd never have met the remarkable Mistress Anan, or been taken to this circle. So if the circle does lead us to the bowl, we have to say he was the root cause.
Matt Cawthon. His name boiled in her head.
Nynaeve stumbled over her own feet and let go of her braid to lift her skirts. The alley was hardly as smooth as a paved square, much less a palace floor. At times, Elaine in a taking was better than Elaine thinking clearly.
Remarkable, she muttered. I'll remarkable her till her eyes cross. No one has ever treated us this way, Elaine. Not even people who doubted. Not even the sea folk. Most people would step wary if a 10-year-old said she was Aes Sedai.
Most people don't really know what an Aes Sedai's face looks like, Nynaeve. I think she went to the tower once. She knows things she couldn't otherwise.
Nynaeve snorted, glowering at the back of the woman striding ahead. Sitala Anan might have been to the tower 10 times, 100, but she was going to acknowledge Nynaeve Almira as Aes Sedai, and apologize, and learn what it was like to be hauled about by her ear, too.
Mistress Anan glanced back, and Nynaeve flashed her a rigid smile, nodded as if her neck was a hinge.
Elaine, if these women do know where the bowl is, we don't have to tell Matt how we found it.
That was not quite a question.
I don't see why, Elaine replied, then dashed all her hopes by adding, But I'll have to ask Avienda to be sure.
If she had not thought the Anan woman might abandon them on the spot, Nynaeve would have screamed.
The wandering alley gave way to a street, and there was no talking then to amount to anything. The sun's thin rim glared blindingly above the rooftops ahead.
Elaine shaded her eyes with one hand very ostentatiously.
Nynaeve refused to. It was not that bad. She barely had to squint at all, really. A clear blue sky mocked her weather sense. That still told her a storm was right on top of the city.
Even this early, a few brightly lacquered coaches were about in the winding streets, and a double fistful of brighter sedan chairs, 2 or sometimes 4 barefoot bearers in green and red striped vests to each, trotting because they carried passengers, hidden behind the grilled wooden screens. Carts and wagons rumbled over the paving stones, and people began to fill the streets as shop doors opened and awnings went up, vested apprentices hurrying on errands, and men with great rolled carpets balanced on their shoulders, tumblers and jugglers and musicians readying themselves at likely corners, and hawkers with their trays of pins or ribbons or shabby fruit. The open-sided fish and meat markets had long since been in full cry. All the fishmongers were women, and most of the butchers, too, except those dealing in beef. Dodging through the crowds, past the coaches and sedan chairs and wagons that seemed to think they had no reason to slow, Mistress Anan set a fast pace to make up for interruptions. There were plenty of those. She seemed to be a well-known woman, hailed by shopkeepers and craftsmen and other innkeepers standing in their doorways. The shopkeepers and craftsmen received a few words, a pleasant nod, but she always stopped to chat a moment with the innkeepers. After the first, Nynaeve wished fervently that she would not again. After the second, she prayed for it. After the third, she stared straight ahead and tried in vain not to hear. Elaine's face grew tighter and tighter, colder and colder. Her chin rose till it was a wonder she could see to walk. There was a reason, Nynaeve had to admit grudgingly. In Ebu Dar, someone wearing silk might stroll the length of a square, maybe, but no further. Everybody else in sight wore wool or linen, seldom with much embroidery,
except for an occasional beggar who had acquired a cast-off silk garment, frayed on every edge and more whole than cloth. She just wished Mistress Anan had chosen some other explanation for why she was leading the pair of them through the streets. She wished she did not have to listen one more time to a tale of two flighty girls who had spent all their money on fine clothes to impress a man. Matt came out of it well, burn him. A fine young fellow, if Mistress Anan had not been married. A beautiful dancer with just a touch of the rogue. All of the women laughed. Not her or Elaine, though. Not the brainless little honey-kissers. That was the word she used. Nynaeve could guess what it meant. Honey-kissers, penniless from chasing after a man, and their purses full of brass bits and tin to fool fools. Witless lubies, who would have been reduced to beggary or theft, had Mistress Anan not known someone who might give them work in the kitchen. "She doesn't have to stop at every inn in the city," Nynaeve growled as she stalked away from the stranded goose. Three broad stories with an innkeeper who wore large garnets at her ears, despite the humble name. Mistress Anan hardly even glanced back to see they followed now. "Do you realize we'll never be able to show our own faces in any of those places?" "I suspect that is exactly the point." Every word out of Elaine's mouth was chipped from ice. "Nynaeve, if you've sent us running after a wild pig—" There was no need to complete the threat. With Birgitta and Avienda to help, and they would, Elaine could make her life miserable until she was satisfied. "They will take us right to the bowl," she insisted, flapping her hands to shoo a beggar with a horrible purple scar that obliterated one eye. She could recognize flower paste dyed with blue wort when she saw it. "I know they will." Elaine sniffed in an offensively expressive manner. Nynaeve lost count of the number of bridges they crossed, large and small, with barges poling beneath. The sun climbed its own height above the rooftops, then twice. The Anan woman did not follow even so straight a line as she might have. She really did seem to be going out of her way to find inns, but they continued generally east, and Nynaeve thought they must be nearing the river, when the hazel-eyed woman suddenly rounded on them. "You watch your tongues now. Speak when you're spoken to, and not else. You embarrass me, and—" With a final frown and a mutter half under her breath that she was probably making a mistake, she jerked her head for them to follow again to a flat-roofed house right opposite. It was not a large house, two stories without one balcony, cracked plaster and brick showing in several places, and hardly in an agreeable location, with the loud rattling of a weaver's looms to one side and the acrid stinks of a dyer's shop to the other. A maid answered the door, though, a graying woman with a square jaw, shoulders like a blacksmith, and a steely eye unsoftened by the sweat on her face. As Nynaeve followed Mistress Anan in, she smiled. Somewhere in that house a woman was channeling. The square-jawed maid obviously knew Setala Anan on sight, but her reaction was odd. She curtsied with a very real respect, yet she was plainly surprised to see her and obviously doubtful about her being there. She almost fluttered before letting them in. Nynaeve and Elaine were greeted with no ambivalence, though. They were shown to a sitting room one flight up, and the maid told them firmly, "Don't stir a toe and don't touch anything, or you'll catch the old what for," then vanished. Nynaeve looked at Elaine. "Nynaeve, one woman channeling doesn't mean—" The field changed, swelling for a moment, then subsiding, lower than before. "Even two women doesn't mean anything," Elaine protested, but she sounded doubtful. That was the most ill-mannered maid I've ever seen. She took a tall-backed red chair, and after a moment Nynaeve sat too, but she perched on the edge. From eagerness, not nerves. Not nerves at all. The room was not grand, but the blue and white floor tiles glistened, and the pale green walls looked freshly painted. No trace of gilt showed anywhere, of course, yet fine carving covered the red chairs arrayed along the walls, and several small tables of a darker blue than the tiles. The lamps hanging from sconces were clearly brass, polished till they shone. Carefully arranged evergreen branches filled the swept hearth, and the lintel above the fireplace was carved, not plain stonework. The carving seemed an odd choice, what people around Ebu Dar called the 13 sins. A man with eyes that nearly filled his whole face for envy. A fellow with his tongue hanging to his ankles for gossip. A snarling, sharp-toothed man clutching coins to his chest for greed, and so on. But all in all, it satisfied her very much. Whoever could afford that room could afford fresh plaster outside, and the only reason not to put it up was to keep low, avoiding notice. The maid had left the door open, and suddenly voices coming up the hall drifted through. "I cannot believe you brought them here." The speaker's tone was tight with incredulity and anger. "You know how careful we are, Satella. You know more than you should, and you surely know that."
"I am very sorry, Rihanna," Mistress Anan answered stiffly. "I suppose I didn't think. I submit myself both to stand surety for these girls' behavior and to your judgment."
"Of course not." Rihanna's tone was high with shock now. "That is to say, I mean, you shouldn't have, but... Satella, I apologize for raising my voice. Say you forgive me."
"You have no reason to apologize, Rihanna." The innkeeper managed to sound rueful and reluctant at the same time. "I did wrong to bring them."
"No, no, Satella, I shouldn't have spoken to you so. Please, you must forgive me. Please do."
The Anan woman and Rihanna Corley entered the sitting room, and Nynaeve blinked in surprise. From the exchange, she had expected someone younger than Satella Anan, but Rihanna had hair more gray than not, and a face full of what might have been smile lines, though they were creased in worry now. Why would the older woman humble herself so to the younger, and why would the younger allow it, however half-heartedly? Customs were different here, the light knew. Some more different than she liked to think about, yet not this much, surely. Of course, she had never gone very far toward being humble with the women's circle back home, but this... Of course, Rihanna could channel. She had expected that. Hoped for it, anyway. But she had not expected the strength. Rihanna was not as strong as Elaine or even Nicola, burn that wretched girl, but she easily equaled Shiriam, say, or Kwamesa, or Kiruna. Not many women possessed so much strength, and for all she herself bettered it by a fair margin, she was surprised to find it here. The woman must be one of the Wilders. The tower would have found a way to keep its hands on a woman like this if they had to hold her in a novice dress her whole life. Nynaeve rose as they came through the doorway, smoothing her skirts. Not from nervousness, certainly. Certainly not. Oh, but if only this came out right... Rihanna's sharp blue eyes studied the two of them with the air of someone who had just found a pair of pigs in her kitchen, fresh from the sty and dripping mud. She dabbed at her face with a tiny handkerchief, though the interior of the house was cooler than outside.
"I suppose we'll have to do something with them," she murmured, "if they are what they claim."
Her voice was quite high even now, musical and almost youthful. As she finished speaking, she gave a small start for some reason, and eyed the innkeeper sideways, which set off another round of Mistress Anan's reluctant apologies and Mistress Corley's flustered attempts to deflect them. In Ebu Dar, when folk were truly being polite, apologies back and forth could flow for an hour. Elaine had risen too, wearing a slightly fixed smile. She raised an eyebrow at Nynaeve, cupped her elbow in one hand, and laid a finger against her cheek. Nynaeve cleared her throat. "Mistress Corley, my name is Nynaeve Almira, and this is Elaine Trakand. We are looking for... Satella has told me all about you," the blue-eyed woman cut in ominously. However many gray hairs on her head, Nynaeve suspected she was also hard as a stone fence. "Abide with patience, girl, and I'll deal with you directly." She turned back to Satella, blotting her cheeks with the handkerchief. Barely suppressed diffidence once more tinged her voice. "Satella, if you will please excuse me, I must question these girls and..."
"Look who is returned after all these years," a short, stout woman in her middle years blurted as she barged into the room, nodding at her companion. Despite her red-belted Ebu Dari dress and a tanned face that glistened damply, her accents were pure Kyrianan. Her equally sweaty companion, in the dark, plainly cut woolens of a merchant, was a head taller, no older than Nynaeve, with dark, tilted eyes, a strongly hooked nose, and a wide mouth.
"It's Garenia! She—"
The flow of words terminated abruptly in confusion as the stout woman realized others were present. Rihanna clasped her hands as if in prayer, or perhaps because she wanted to hit someone.
"Berowyn," she said with an edge. "One day you will run right off a cliff before you see it under your feet."
"I am sorry, El—" Blushing, the Kyrianin lowered her eyes. The Saldaean became intent on fiddling with a circle of red stones pinned at her breast. For Nynaeve's part, she gave Elaine a triumphant look. Both newcomers could channel, and Sidar was still being wielded somewhere in the house. Two more, and while Berowyn was not very strong, Garenia stood even above Rihanna. She could match Lelaine or Romanda. Not that that mattered, of course, yet this made at least five. Elaine's chin set stubbornly, but then she sighed and gave a small nod. Sometimes it took the most incredible effort to convince her of anything.
"Your name is Garenia?" Mistress Anand said slowly, frowning at the woman in question.
"You look very much like someone I met once. Zarya Alkeza." Dark, tilted eyes blinked in surprise. Plucking a lace-trimmed handkerchief from her sleeve, the Saldaean merchant touched her cheeks.
"That is my grandmother's sister's name," she said after a moment. "I'm told I favor her strongly. Was she well when you saw her? She forgot her family completely after she went off to become Aes Sedai."
"Your grandmother's sister?" The innkeeper laughed softly. "Of course. She was well when I saw her, but that was a long time ago. I was younger than you are now."
Rihanna had been hovering at her side, all but grabbing her elbow, and now she leaped in.
"Setala, I truly am sorry, but I really must ask you to excuse us. You will forgive me not showing you to the door?"
Mistress Anand made her own apologies, as if she was at fault because the other woman could not escort her down, and departed with a last, very dubious look at Nynaeve and Elaine.
"Setala!" Garenia exclaimed as soon as the innkeeper was gone. "That was Setala Anand? How did she— Light of heaven! Even after 70 years, the tower would—"
"Garenia," Mistress Corley said in an extremely sharp tone. Her stare was sharper still, and the Saldaean's face reddened.
"Since you two are here, we can make up the three for questioning. You girls stay where you are and keep silent."
That last was for Nynaeve and Elaine. The other women withdrew to a corner in a huddle and began conversing in soft murmurs.
Elaine moved nearer Nynaeve. "I did not like being treated as a novice when I was a novice. How long do you intend to continue this farce?"
Nynaeve hissed at her for quiet.
"I'm trying to listen, Elaine," she whispered.
Using the power was out of the question, of course. The three would have known on the instant. Fortunately, they wove no barriers, perhaps not knowing how, and sometimes their voices rose just enough.
"Said they may be wilders," Rihanna said, and shock and revulsion bloomed on the other women's faces.
"Then we show them the door," Berowyn said. "The back door. Wilders."
"I still want to know who this Setala Anand is," Garenia put in.
"If you can't keep your mind on the straight," Rihanna told her, "perhaps you should spend this turn on the farm. Alice knows how to concentrate a mind wonderfully. Now." The words dropped back to a buzz. Another maid appeared, a slender woman, pretty except for a sullen expression, with a rough grey woolen dress and a long white apron. Setting a green lacquered tray on one of the small tables, she surreptitiously wiped her cheeks with a corner of her apron and began fussing with blue glazed cups and a matching teapot. Nynaeve's eyebrows rose. This woman could channel too, if not to any high degree. What was she doing as a servant?
Garenia glanced over her shoulder and gave a start. "What did Daris do to earn penance? I thought fish would sing the day she cracked a rule, much less broke one."
Berowyn sniffed loudly, but her reply was barely audible. She wanted to marry.
She will advance a turn and go with Carila the day after the Feast of the Half Moon. That will settle for Master Denal.
"Perhaps you both wish to hoe the fields for Elise?" Rihanna spoke dryly, and the voices fell again.
Nynaeve felt a rush of exultation. She did not care much for rules, at least for other people's rules. Other people rarely saw the situation as clearly as she, and thus made stupid rules. Why should that woman, Deris, not marry if she wished, for example? But rules and penances spoke of a society. She was right. And another thing. She nudged Elaine until the other woman bent her head. "Berowyn's wearing a red belt," she whispered. That indicated a wise woman, one of Ebudar's fabled healers, their care known far and wide as the next best to being healed by an Aes Sedai, curing just about anything. Supposedly it was all done with herbs and knowledge, but how many wise women have we seen, Elaine? How many could channel? How many were Ebudari, or even Altaren?
7, counting Berowyn, was the slow answer. And only one, I was sure, was from here.
Ha! The others plainly had not been. Elaine took a deep breath, though she went on softly.
None had anywhere near these women's strength, though.
At least she had not suggested they were mistaken somehow. All of those wise women had been able.
Nynaeve, are you really suggesting that the wise women, all the wise women, are... That would be beyond incredible.
Elaine, this city has a guild for the men who sweep the squares every night. I think we've just found the ancient muckety-muck sisterhood of wise women. The stubborn woman shook her head.
The tower would have had 100 sisters here years ago, Nynaeve. 200. Anything of the sort would have been squashed flat in short order.
Maybe the tower doesn't know, Nynaeve said. Maybe the guild keeps low enough that the tower never thought they were worth troubling. There's no law against channeling if you aren't Aes Sedai, only against claiming to be Aes Sedai or misusing the power, or bringing discredit. That meant doing anything that might possibly cast a bad light on real Aes Sedai should anyone happen to think you were one, which was going pretty far to her way of thinking. The real trouble, though, was that she did not believe it. The tower seemed to know everything, and they probably would break up a quilting circle if the women in it could channel. Yet there had to be some explanation for... Only half aware, she felt the true source being embraced, but suddenly she became very aware. Her mouth fell open as a flow of air snared her braid right at the base of her skull and ran her across the room on her toes. Elaine ran right beside her, red-faced with fury. The worst of it was they were both shielded. The short run ended when they were allowed to settle their heels in front of Mistress Corley and the other two, all three seated against the wall in red chairs, all surrounded by the glow of Sidar. "You were told to be quiet," Rihanna said firmly. "If we decide to help you, you will have to learn that we expect strict obedience no less than the White Tower itself." She imbued those last words with a tone of reverence. "I will tell you that you would have been treated more gently if you had not come to us in this irregular fashion." The flow gripping Nynaeve's braid vanished. Elaine tossed her head angrily as she was released. Appalled astonishment became fiery outrage as Nynaeve realized that Berowyn held her shield. Most Aes Sedai she had met stood above Berowyn, nearly all. Gathering herself, she strained to reach the source, expecting the weaves to shatter. She would at least show these women she would not be. The weaves stretched. The round Kyrianan woman smiled, and Nynaeve's face darkened. The shield stretched further, further, bulging like a ball. It would not break. That was impossible. Anyone could block her from the source if they caught her by surprise, of course, and someone weaker could hold the shield once woven, but not this much weaker. And a shield did not bend that far without breaking. It was impossible. "You could burst a blood vessel if you keep at that," Berowyn said, almost companionably. "We do not try to reach above our station, but skills are honed with time, and this was always nearly a talent with me. I could hold one of the Forsaken." Scowling, Nynaeve gave over. She could wait. Since she had no choice, she could.
Daris came, bearing her tray, distributing cups of dark tea to the three seated women. She never so much as glanced at Nynaeve or Elaine before making a perfect curtsy and returning to her table.
"We could have been drinking blueberry tea, Nynaeve," Elaine said, shooting such a look at her that she came close to stepping back. "Maybe it would be best not to wait too long."
"Be quiet, girl."
Mistress Corley's tone might be calm, but she patted her handkerchief to her face angrily. "Our report of you says you both are froward and contentious, that you chase after men and lie, to which I add that you cannot follow simple instructions, all of which must change if you seek our help. All of it. This is most irregular. Be grateful we're willing to speak to you."
"We do seek your help," Nynaeve said. She wished Elaine would stop glaring so. It was worse than the Corley woman's hard stare. Well, as bad, anyway. "We desperately need to find a Turangrial." Rhianna Corley broke in as if she'd been standing there silent.
"Usually we know the girls brought to us beforehand, but we must make certain you are what you say. How many doors to the tower library may a novice use, and which?"
She took a sip of tea, waiting.
"Two."
The word dripped venom from Elaine's mouth. "The main door to the east when a sister sends her, or the small door at the southwest corner called the novice door when she goes for herself. How long, Nynaeve?"
Garinia, who held Elaine's shield, channeled another slender flow of air, not gently. Elaine quivered, then again, and Nynaeve winced, wondering that she did not grab at the back of her skirt.
"A civil tongue is another requirement," Garinia murmured wryly into her cup.
"That is the right answer," Mistress Corley said, as if nothing else had happened, although she did eye the Saldaean woman briefly over her tea. "Now, how many bridges in the water garden?"
"Three," Nynaeve snapped, mainly because she knew. She had not known about the library, having never been a novice.
"We need to know..." Berwin could not spare anything to channel a flow of air, but Mistress Corley could, and did. Barely keeping her face smooth, Nynaeve knotted her hands in her skirts to hold them still. Elaine had the gall to give her a small, chilly smile. Chilly, but satisfied.
A dozen more questions hammered at them, from how many floors the novice quarters contained, 12, to under what circumstances a novice was allowed into the hall of the tower, to carry messages or to be expelled from the tower for a crime, no others. Hammered without Nynaeve getting in more than two words, and those two answered silently by the horrible Corley woman. She began to feel like a novice in the hall. They were not allowed to speak a word either. That was one of the few answers she knew, but luckily Elaine responded promptly when she did not. Nynaeve might have done better had they asked about accepted, a little better at least, but it was what a novice should know that interested them. She was just glad Elaine was willing to go along, though by her pale cheeks and raised chin, that could not last much longer.
"I suppose Nynaeve was really there," Rhianna said finally, exchanging glances with the other two. "If Elaine taught her to pass, I think she would have done a better job. Some people live in perpetual fog."
Garinia sniffed, then nodded slowly. Berwin's nod came entirely too promptly for Nynaeve's liking.
"Please," she said politely. She could be polite when there was reason, whatever anyone said. "We truly need to find a Turangrial the sea folk call the Bowl of the Winds. It's in a dusty old storeroom somewhere in the Rahad, and I think your guild, your circle, must know where. Please help us."
Three suddenly stony faces stared at her.
"There is no guild," Mistress Corley said coolly. "Only a few friends who found no place in the White Tower."
Again that reverential tone.
"And who are foolish enough occasionally to reach out a hand where it's needed. We have no truck with Turangrial or Angrial or Saangrial either. We are not Aes Sedai."
Aes Sedai echoed with veneration as well.
"In any case, you are not here to ask questions. We have more for you, to see how far you've gone,
after which you will be taken to the country and given into the care of a friend. She will keep you until we decide what to do next, until we can be sure the sisters are not looking for you. You have a new life ahead of you, a new chance, if you can only let yourselves see it. Whatever held you back in the tower does not apply here, whether a lack of dexterity or fear or anything else. No one will push you to learn or do what you cannot. What you are is sufficient. Now.
Enough, Elaine said in a wintry voice. Long enough, Nynaeve. Or do you intend to wait in the country for however long? They do not have it, Nynaeve.
Removing her great serpent ring from her belt pouch, she thrust the circle of gold onto her finger. From the way she looked at the seated women, no one would believe her shielded. She was a queen out of patience. She was Aes Sedai to her hair was what she was.
I am Elaine Trakand, high seat of House Trakand. I am daughter heir of Andor and Aes Sedai of the Green Aja, and I demand you release me immediately.
Nynaeve groaned. Garenia grimaced with disgust, and Berowyn's eyes widened in horror. Rhianna Corley shook her head ruefully, but when she spoke, her voice was iron.
I had hoped Satala had changed your mind concerning that particular lie. I know how hard it is to set out proudly for the White Tower, then find yourself faced with returning home to admit failure. But that is never said, even in joke.
I made no joke, Elaine said lightly. Snow was light. Garenia leaned forward with a scowl, a flow of air already forming until Mistress Corley raised her hand.
And you, Nynaeve? Do you persist in this madness, too?
Nynaeve filled her lungs. These women had to know where the bowl was. They just had to.
Nynaeve! Elaine said peevishly.
She was not going to let her forget this, even if they did have to effect an escape. She had a way of harping on every little misstep in a manner that cut the ground right from under your feet.
I am an Aes Sedai of the Yellow Aja, Nynaeve said wearily.
The true Amarlin seat, Egwene Alvear, raised us to the shawl in Salidar. She's no older than Elaine, you must have heard. Not a glimmer of change in those three hard faces. She sent us to find the Bowl of the Winds. With it we can mend the weather. Not a flicker of change. She tried to hold her anger down. She truly did. It just oozed up despite her. You must want that. Look around you. The Dark One is strangling the world. If you have even a hint of where the bowl might be, tell us. Mistress Corley motioned for Darris, who came and took the cups, casting fearful wide-eyed looks at Nynaeve and Elaine. When she scurried away, out of the room in fact, the three women stood slowly, standing like grim magistrates pronouncing sentence.
I regret that you will not accept our help, Mistress Corley said coldly. I regret this whole affair.
Reaching into her pouch, she pressed three silver marks into Nynaeve's hand, and another three into Elaine's.
These will take you a little way. You can also get something for those dresses, I should think, if not what you paid. Those are hardly suitable garments for a journey. By tomorrow sunrise, you will be gone from Ebu Dar.
We aren't going anywhere, Nynaeve told her. Please, if you know... She might as well have kept silent. The measured flow of words did not slow.
At that time we will begin circulating your descriptions, and we will make certain they reach the sisters in the Tarasin Palace. If you are seen after sunrise, we will see that the sisters know where you are, and the white cloaks as well. Your choice then will be to run, surrender to the sisters, or die. Go, do not return, and you should live long if you give over this repulsive and dangerous ruse. We are done with you. Berowyn, see to them, please.
Brushing between them, she went from the room without looking back.
Sullenly, Nynaeve let herself be herded down to the front door. A struggle would not achieve anything except maybe being thrown out bodily, but she did not like giving up. Light she did not.
Elaine marched, frozen determination to leave and be done shining in every line of her. In the small entry hall, Nynaeve decided to try once more.
Please, Garenia, Berowyn, if you have any hint, tell us.
any clue at all. You must see how important this is. You must.
The blindest are those who keep their eyes shut, Elaine quoted, not quite under her breath.
Berowyn hesitated, but not Garinia. She put her face right in Nynaeve's.
Do you think we're fools, girl? I'll tell you this. If I had my way, we would bundle you out to the farm no matter what you say. A few months of Elise's attentions and you'd learn to guard your tongue and be grateful for the help you spit on.
Nynaeve considered hitting her on the nose. She did not need Sidar to use her fist.
Garinia, Berowyn said sharply, apologize. We do not hold anyone against her will, and you know it well. Apologize immediately.
And wonder of wonders, the woman who would have stood very close to the top had she been Aes Sedai looked sideways at the woman who would have stood near the bottom and blushed crimson.
I ask forgiveness, Garinia mumbled at Nynaeve.
My temper gets the better of me sometimes, and I say what I have no right to. I humbly ask forgiveness. Another sidelong glance at Berowyn, who nodded, producing a sigh of open relief. While Nynaeve was still gaping, the shields were released, and she and Elaine were pushed into the street, the door slamming shut behind them.